I'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, the Lisa Rector team at Keller Williams Realty. There are a lot of realtors out there, many great options to choose from. However, when making the choice when buying or selling a home, maybe look at the heart behind the realtor. Lisa supports philanthropy throughout our area, is a mom of three little ones, and wife of a Champaign firefighter. She also is a huge supporter of women in our area, period. You can tell a personal mission of hers is to shine a light on those that may not always get the recognition they deserve. As a busy mom, Lisa understands how valuable and priceless someone's time is. No looking at houses out of your budget, out of the neighborhood you prefer. Your deal breakers and must-haves will be respected and remembered when showing you homes. When selling, showings and negotiations will be done keeping your time and privacy of the utmost importance. The team uses efficient practices so that no time is wasted from the move to the move in, from the sell to the buy. Find your family's next happy home with the Lisa Rector team at Keller Williams. With over 10 years of experience, the Lisa Rector team is built around developing lifetime relationships for all your real estate needs. Whether you are buying or selling, they will make sure your experience is enjoyable. Visit the Lisa Rector team.kw.com. City lights looking fine, and I know this is my time now. I'm gonna be myself, or I could be someone else. No one's stopping me now. I'm gonna skip my breaks, I'm gonna make mistakes. I just wanna feel alive. It's just what I do when I'm out, so try not to hold me down. Feel alive when I'm in this town. Hey, this is Champaign, Illinois native Emily Harrington coming to you from Kitchen Table Studios in the ever-evolving, sometimes boring, flatlands of Champaign-Urbana for the next podcast episode of Hyperlocals, where townies and transplants share their tales of tears and triumphs, losses and wins, so stay tuned to catch the characters behind the beloved Twin Cities of CU. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of the Hyper Locals podcast. This is very exciting for me. I have had her on my list for 2 years since my initial list of potential guests. So it's exciting that we are finally at Kitchen Table Studios. I have also known her now for maybe 9 years, and I have discovered through kind of vetting and going through the questions that I don't know as much as I really thought about her. There is a ton more to learn, and that's what I'm here to do. This is Ryan Two Ends Monahan. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Emily.
How's it going?
It's good.
She told me right before I started recording that she has never shied away from a microphone.
No, I've never found a microphone I don't like. In fact, I like that was my first profession, is loving holding a microphone.
Well, it's funny because your whole demeanor and voice has kind of gotten a little sultrier.
You know it. And I learned when I was teaching journalism that it's actually one of the flaws of, like, you're supposed to talk the way you talk in daily life.
Sure.
And
sure.
So you, like, if you watch the news and you're like, see this news anchor and you just hear this fake anchor voice.
Yes.
And you're like, I always ask myself, is that how they talk to their family?
Yes, yes, yes.
And so, like, that's what you'd have to, like, teach yourself to be very authentic and very conversational.
Yes. Okay, so when you listen to your voice with your past professions, do you like how you sound? Most people do not.
Not really. But I am proud of, because, again, like, at some point in the process, someone critiques you and says you sound fake.
Yeah.
And then you're like, and this is what, you know, one of my favorite professors of all time, his name is John Paul at the University of Illinois. And he said, I want you just to pretend that you're talking to your grandma.
Sure.
Would you talk in that tone to your grandma?
Right. Have you ever heard a woman with vocal fry? Have you heard this?
Mm-mm.
It's when they kind of, like, lift their voice up a little bit.
Yeah.
I know. It's the worst. And it makes me tune out for sure. So, Ryan, two ends. Let's talk about where you come from. Where are you from?
I grew up in Naperville, Illinois.
Okay.
and I came here for college and I never left.
Okay. Now, did your brother, did he go to U of I?
Yep. He went to U of I too.
Did you overlap?
By 1 year. Aww. And we made it a point to make sure we had one class together.
Really?
Yeah. But I also stayed for grad school. So there was overlap there. He was still in school while I was in grad school.
Okay. So while in Naperville, you visited U of I. What was your impression of the school?
What was where I was always going to go. My mom supervised student teachers for Illinois State University. And so we thought that I just would always go to University of Illinois, in part because everybody who knows, if you're vested by a certain amount, you know, you get a discount on tuition. You have to work at the university for, I think, 10 years. But so that was a big carrot dangling. And I wanted to go. I mean, University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, is hugely popular up in the Chicago suburbs, and it's incredibly competitive to get into.
Sure. So when we were talking about you coming on the podcast, one of the things that kind of kept reoccurring, you said, when is it that I'm considered a townie?
I know.
Do you consider yourself a townie?
No, because I was told many times that if you don't go to high school in Champaign, you're not a townie. I'll never be. I mean, how much do I have to pay my dues?
Who told you that?
People.
Is this a term that you want? Townie, yes. You do?
My kids get to be townies. That's and I'm true. The ones who I'm raising them and keeping them here.
Okay.
I'm contributing to this community. I started a nonprofit in this community.
Yeah, we got to talk about that too. Oh, that was on my list.
But so the joke is, you know, I've invested my life and chosen to raise my family here, and I can't be a townie, and it's really heartbreaking. It's really triggering, and I just don't know when I'll be good enough.
That is really funny. Just kidding. Because I will give you that term, but most people do not see it as a positive term. Ooh. But you do.
See, you know, I think I do a little bit because I have a lot of friends that grew up here.
Sure, sure.
And they have these really special relationships and this history. Mm. And it's sort of, you know, I never really wanted to go back to Naperville for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where I would have gone if I didn't get stuck here. But So, maybe for the people that grew up here, they're like ready to leave. Like I was ready to leave Naperville. But yeah. I am like envious. And I find these relationships that grew up in Champaign, like your family growing up going to Illini games.
Yeah, yeah.
And having that history, I think is so special and so cool. And going to the same pool multiple generations. Yeah. And so the fact that my boys are able to do that, and they are like at every Illini home game tailgate, they can go to basketball games anytime. It's just a special place to be.
Yeah.
And it's this micro urban environment. It's not rural, it's not urban.
Yeah, a little of everything.
It's a little of everything. And so I don't know when I'm gonna be a townie, but
You're raising townies, if nothing else.
I am.
But I'll give you that term. I'll give you that term, townie. So you know, the thing is also, you appreciate it. And I don't think I do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't see it as, oh, I get to go to an Illini game and I get to grow up like this. So you have an appreciation for it that townies may not.
I very much appreciate it because I do see how my family is in Naperville. And if they want to go to a major football game, you have to get Chicago Bears tickets. And my dad, he has two season tickets, Chicago Bears or my grandfather's. And I don't even ever use them because it's such a pain.
Yeah.
Even if I'm in the suburbs to get to the city to walk. You know, if they want to go to a major basketball game, you're going to a Bulls game and usually paying a bunch of money to do that. And it's not like something like, oh, I'm just going to go on a Tuesday night to watch our Fighting Illini play. Like, that's really special.
Yeah.
And then you feel this sense of belonging. And mm-hmm. I think that that's just sort of, and I think that's one of the reasons, like, I stayed here is that, like, everybody has this innate desire to feel like they belong somewhere mm-hmm. and they're a part of something bigger. And this sounds so corny, so please, everybody cringing, like, I know, I recognize how corny this sounds, but, like, to be a part of the, like, Illini family, when we're all in State Farm Center together, like, going crazy, that energy, we're all, for, like, a moment in time, on the same team.
Yeah,
like,
no matter what religion or political
affiliation. Yes, like, it's, and same with the way the community comes together for, you know, Saturday football games.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I like that being a part of that. I like Saturday night, we're planning on going to watch the men's tennis team, which is another really fun thing to do.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people take advantage and go watch our hockey teams play and our volleyball team. You know, you can't do that in Naperville.
Yeah, it'd be a whole day to do. Yeah. And we can just pop in and out. Yeah, yeah. I love looking at it through your lens. It makes me, I need to have a little more gratitude towards where I grew up, I think. But you describe coming here as you got stuck here.
Yep.
Fondly, you describe it that way.
Yeah.
What does that mean and how did that exactly happen?
So I was in undergrad and okay. I wanted to change my major, my like... junior year, and I wanted to go. I took this awesome class from this professor named Scott Althaus. He's still there, and from what I know, very beloved by many students. But he taught a political science and media class and how the media influences politics. Mm. And I found it so fascinating.
Oh, wow.
And that would have been like 2002. And now look where we are.
Yes.
With the transformation of digital media and the influence that the media has on politics. And so even back in 2002, 2003, I was like totally mesmerized by this. And I wanted to like go into politics and be influential in policy making to help people. But then I was like, no, like the power is in this like media because it can shift and frame and like how things work. And so I got this internship, and this will be another gasp, at Fox News Channel. So I got this internship at Fox News Channel, and I like had like such a great summer. So I don't think that they did have the reputation they have now, but I don't think it was as polarizing and as, you know, strong then. And just to know that politically, I'm very middle of the road. The next three internships were at NBC. So I did NBC in Washington, D.C., Nightly News. I did NBC Investigative Unit in Washington, D.C., and then NBC in Chicago. So I spent three summers with the opposite side of the political spectrum.
Sure, sure.
So I saw both sides of how news gets put together.
Oh, that is so interesting.
Anyway, so I wanted to change my major, and they said, you can't change your major this late in the game, and so why don't you go to grad school? And so I did, and I stayed for grad school, and I loved it. Like, I got to take all the journalism classes I didn't get to take in undergrad, because I was just media studies before that.
Okay.
So I wanted to go into journalism and got into grad school, and so I was interning at Channel 3, and then I got a job offer from Channel 15, which is now like Fox Illinois, but it used to be ABC WICD News Channel 15. And so I got a job offer while I was still in grad school. And the way that the news media markets work, we are, I think, like something like 80. Like if one is New York City and two is LA and Chicago's three, you know, Dallas might be five. I haven't looked at the list in a while, but to and I think there's like at like 200, right?
Okay.
And so if you want to go to like a town that's even smaller than Champaign-Urbana.
Sure.
And make even less money than I made.
Right.
Like Champaign was like the best place. Like I got to stay here.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle. Like I got a job that is typically people's second jobs in TV.
Oh, so you made a little jump.
And so I stayed. And then I work nights and weekends, had a horrible schedule. It's not like the university where you get like a bazillion days off.
Mm-hmm.
You got like barely any days off, but because you worked weekends, this is like a time in my life where friends were getting married and like all this stuff was going on. I was taking all my days off for friends and family weddings.
Yeah.
And then I really, really had an emotional response to working things like Christmas Eve and Christmas Day alone.
Sure.
And my family came down and would like hang out, but it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
And then I realized that like I had an emotional response like working 4th of July and Memorial Day, and I'm like, you know what, I just don't like working holidays, and I don't like missing weddings and all those things. And so I started just to view things differently. And then, you know, you have a contract in TV. I had a contract for 3 years, and all of a sudden I was like, this is when I need to make my move. I actually had a job offer from Columbus, Ohio. But I was going to go back to working nights and weekends, or I could stay here a little bit longer and get the day side shift Monday through Friday.
Okay.
And that's all I wanted. And they gave me a photographer. So the 3 years, I was a one-man band reporter working nights and weekends, making no money. And they gave me a good raise at the time. And I got a photographer, and I was working Monday through Friday with the prime shift. And I was like, I'll stay another 2 years. Like, I'm good. Like, I love this town. I love reporting. And I love working Monday through Friday and having weekends off.
Yeah.
And then that was when I really, like, started analyzing, like, do I want my life to look this way? And I knew that I wanted to be a mom. And what would this look like if I was never home for dinner? I was never at kids' stuff on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And how would that even work? And was I truly happy doing that? And so that really sort of shifted my mindset on, like, what do I want my life to be? Mm. And unfortunately, like, for me, that meant I had to put, you know, my dream of being the next Diane Sawyer on the shelf. Like, you know, like, again, I make a joke that, like, I was, like, totally going to be the next Diane Sawyer. I told myself that because we're all fed a load of BS that no matter what you do, if you work hard enough, you can be whatever you want to be.
And your parents told you that. And they
every society, yeah. I mean, told us that you can be whatever you want as a little girl. And
it's, and you feel like that's the wrong thing to tell someone.
I don't know if that's the wrong thing. I don't want my kid thinking that he is going to go play in the NFL if he just works hard enough.
He could, though.
I don't know. There's a lot, like... You know, there's a lot of roadblocks.
But not being Diane Sawyer has not made you bitter or resentful.
No, because I really, I view it for me that I traded it for being a really good mom and a really present mom.
Yeah.
I really like being at all my kids' things. And I know you're there with me in the trenches, volunteering at Valentine's Day parties. Yes. And we're volunteering at driving to, you know, whatever we need to for sports after school and being there for our kids and helping them with homework. And the life that I saw as following the path, jumping cities every 3 years or so to keep going up would keep putting you on that nights and weekends. Mm. And I just didn't have it in me. Maybe I wasn't talented enough. Maybe I wasn't tough enough to wait it out. Mm-hmm. I also knew that I didn't want to have kids really late. And I look at some people that stuck it out and they're really great journalists and they had kids probably 10 years later than I did. And that is a personal choice. And I totally commend those people that make that choice. But I knew that I didn't want to wait, you know, until I was in my 40s to have kids.
Yeah. Anyone that you worked with then in TV, is there anyone that's still around today?
That's still local in Champaign-Urbana? Well, Jennifer Roscoe. Okay. I mean, well, she was on Channel 3. I was on WICD, but she's like...
Were you competitors in a sense?
We were competitors, but she's always the best. I mean, no one's better than her.
And she's someone that's kind of done it all. She's, you know, still present with her kids and still...
100% she is, yeah.
Okay, so you never felt icky about the path shift for you. You're okay with being the next Diane Sawyer. And you decided, we've both talked about this. I was editorial, so I wasn't behind a camera, but I was making $24,000 a year.
Yeah.
Right. And I got an appendectomy and it was paid for because I was at poverty level. And I asked my male boss, I got all the courage I could. I went in there after a year and I said, I'd like a raise. And he gave me a quarter an hour raise.
Yeah.
I mean, the thought of that makes me like, it's just the amount of work you put in to achieve your dream and what you get back. It's disappointing.
And I think that was part of it, too, to get to sort of that celebrity status of a comfortable life. I mean, news reporters don't make a ton of money. The anchors make more because they're the face of the news station. Yeah. Right. But the reporters are really, for me, it was, you know, someone also told me, like, you know, if you find a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
And I really like bought into that too. Yeah. Like I can be whatever I want and I can do a job and never work a day in my life.
Yeah.
And that really was what a lot of this was. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
I loved telling people stories. I loved making sure that the stories were fairly told.
Yeah. Do you have any stories that stick out to you? And I did not pre-interview you on that. Yeah. So I'm putting you on the spot. What was happening societally?
What was happening is that, so the chief was getting retired. Was a big story. That, and I remember, so this is a trick I learned when I was working in the investigative unit for NBC Nightly News in Washington, D.C. There was, I forget, okay, this would have been like 2005, and there was a Supreme Court justice that was getting brought up into, you know, beyond the Supreme Court.
Sure.
You didn't know who it was going to be yet when we were in Washington, D.C. And so our investigative unit just called hotels in Washington, D.C. and said, could you connect me to John Doe's room? Like the person's name. And like the trick was if they said, yes, sure, I'll connect you to their room. You knew that candidate for the Supreme Court was in town.
Wow.
And so I was like, So when the chief was getting retired, there were all these rumors that like this was the big day. And as a reporter, we wanted to break the story and I wanted to break the story.
Oh my God.
And so at the time, there was a gentleman named Tom Hardy, and he was the chief communications officer for the University of Illinois system.
Okay.
Great guy. I think he's since retired. But so, you know, we were getting these rumblings that the announcement was coming the next day and we wanted to break the story. And so sure enough, I called all the hotels in the area and asked to be connected to Tom Hardy's room. And he, sure enough, I was connected to his room at the Illini Union.
No way.
And I was like, hey, Tom, it's Ryan Monahan. Can you speak to anything about this announcement coming? And he did. He gave me some information that like we knew it was coming. And I think that maybe like, you know, other media outlets might have known too, but like that was a really exciting moment of what was going on.
Oh, I love that. Was there anything embarrassing that happened? Do you remember anything terrible, like getting caught in the rain or?
No, the most embarrassing story, and this is a super sad story. So the most embarrassing story was when there was a bank hostage situation in Arcola, Illinois. And I remember the hostages were held for several hours. A sheriff's deputy passed away, chasing down the criminals, that it was a really, really, really sad, emotional day for the entire community, but especially Douglas County. And I got asked to be a reporter live for the ABC station in Chicago. And that was like my dream, right? So I was like, oh my God, this is when they recognize me. This is my moment. Agents are going to be calling. And so I'm ready to go. The photographer from Chicago was like, when I make this hand gesture, it means you need to stop. Like, it's done. Like, we've lost the signal, so just stop talking. And he made the signal, and in the middle of a sentence, I just stopped talking.
No.
I just stopped talking. Like, and I just froze. I was just like,
oh no.
Okay, I have to like, what happened? Like, something happened. And all of a sudden, he goes, they like cut out. He goes, why'd you stop talking? I go, well, you did the symbol. And he's like, I was telling you to wrap it up, not just stop talking in the middle of a sentence. And I just blew it. Like,
oh, Ryan, like, I can picture it.
And they basically said that like, oh, they just thought that like the whole mic situation cut out. And I just was frozen. Like the whole thing froze. And so it looked like there was a whatever, but a
technical error.
But no, it was me. All me. I'm the problem. It's me.
That could have been your big break.
It was my break. It was my chance, and I failed, and I'm still here.
But you love it here.
I do love it here. I wish we had more restaurants.
Oh, I wish we had. Bloomington has some killer restaurants.
I know.
And I'm a little bit bitter about that. You use Donald Dodd's quote.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that? Because that's stuck with you.
So it has. So he was sort of a force in the community. He's since passed away. But he, when Jim Gould's was downtown Champaign, if you remember Jim Gould's. Yes. So it was this nice steakhouse located where Big Grove is right now, for anybody who's not familiar. And I would go there, you know, it was kind of where you went if you went and got dressed up and whatnot. And he was always at the bar, always at the bar. And he was really fun to talk to. He would just tell you story after story after story. And he'd talk to anybody who would listen. And he traveled a lot, and so he knew that like I was considering, somehow I was talking about like, oh, I'm still here and I came to school here and never left. And he said, my favorite thing about Champaign-Urbana is that it's such a great place to come home to.
Mm.
And he said, I've traveled all over the world and I don't want to come home to a major city and I don't want to come home to, you know, nothing, but this is a comfortable and friendly place. It's the best place to come home to. And I do feel that way as well.
Yeah, that really resonated with you.
It did. It is a nice place to come home to because it's calm enough, but not too calm. And it's not crazy. And you can get your life, you know, back on track after a long vacation and can appreciate the quietness of it, but it just has enough vibrancy to keep you kind of busy.
Yeah. You have two very loving, engaged parents.
I do. Yep.
Do you miss being close to them or vice versa?
All the time.
Oh, I can tell that just when they're around that you like just, you eat them up. You absorb them.
Yeah.
And your brother, is he close to them?
He is, yeah. So he lived in Chicago for a period, you know, out of college and whatnot. And then he, right before COVID, he bought a house sort of in their neighborhood. So he's raising his family just a couple blocks away.
Okay. So that would be the only thing that would pull you away, is to be closer to them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But that probably won't happen.
We are strategic in the time that we spend together. And, you know, like, I work at the University of Illinois now, and I've earned enough, you know, vacation time that if I need to go up there, I can.
Yeah.
And I have a wonderful you know, supportive work environment in the college that I work in. And so if I needed to do that, I can. And so we trade off, and there's not too much time ever goes by. We also started a tradition a long time ago where we always went spring break together. So with the kids. So
that's coming right up.
Yes. We're really excited.
Okay. So are we at the part of your life story where you start to have babes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I mean, so you kind of decided that this route, journalism, will not be your ultimate future.
Yeah, so I decided that, you know, I was pregnant. I was married and pregnant at the time with my oldest when that second contract was up. And I think we had pre-talked about it, but like I was making at the time, and it was like 2010, I was making $30,000 a year. And I remember I was like, I can't like afford to live on this. And when you looked at childcare, there was no way that like childcare would be more expensive than the salary. And you know, that was a jump from my $21,000 entry level salary I had as a reporter. So they just said that you've maxed out. Like the corporation that owned the TV station was Sinclair Broadcast Group. The news director at the time just said, you've maxed out at $30,000. And I just said, I don't have anywhere to go. And I wasn't going to be the anchor, and I wasn't going to be the morning show anchor, and I wasn't going to anchor the 5, 6, and 10 o'clock news where maybe there would have been growth. But so
you wouldn't have done that because those positions were kind of locked in.
They were locked in. It wasn't totally my thing, though. I wanted to be that like investigative journalist. Like I loved being, it sounds bananas, but I loved being at city council meetings and school board meetings.
Whoa.
The consent decree in Unit 4 was really big at the time. So I found myself incredibly well informed on I could like you'd go live on TV and I didn't even need a script or anything. I could just talk about it. And that's where I really thought that I felt like I really also thrived as a reporter in town. I stayed long enough to become very familiar with the players, and I stayed long enough to really know the people on all sides of issues enough to fairly tell stories, but also talk about it without a script, you know?
Yeah. So you never really wanted to be behind the desk. You wanted to be out and about.
Yeah, I wanted to be out and about. Okay. And I always loved those, like, I don't know, stories where like you unraveled some injustice.
Yeah,
and
I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so you decide not to renew your contract.
I decided not to renew my contract, yep.
And you had your son, Donnie.
Yep.
Knowing you, you're busy, you're fast-paced, you're energetic, and you're career motivated.
Yep.
So going from that to a full-time mom, I imagine was quite a change for you.
It was really like a transition for sure. I think that I lost like a little bit of who I was.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I got my master's degree. I was like had these big dreams, and then all of a sudden, you know, I'm at home, and mothers and fathers, parents who choose to stay at home and take care of their kids in lieu of working, it is so hard. It is so exhausting. I mean, like, let me tell you a secret. I go to work and it's like this dreamy thing where like it's so hard to juggle, but like I can like if my kids were still at home, I could still grab a coffee and get in the car alone and wear a nice outfit and like go sit in an office alone if I wanted for 7.5 hours a day.
Yes.
And so
it was a break in a sense.
But I think that like I can argue both sides. I lived both sides. I can argue because now I'm, you know, sweating, getting to my kid's basketball game because I have a meeting at 3 o'clock or a meeting at 4 o'clock with my boss.
Right.
And I still haven't been to the grocery store, and I have no idea what we're eating for dinner. I have no idea how people who are forced to be at work for 7.5 hours a day and get their kids from school and get their kids to basketball at 4:45 and take their kids to a baseball game in Arthur, Illinois and be there by 4:30 and work and feed them and do the laundry and let the dog out. Like, so I actually don't understand how any of us make any of it work.
Yeah.
I don't, it's so hard on everyone. And that's where everybody, you see these stupid Facebook arguments and you see people commenting one way or the other. And you're like, you don't even know.
Yeah.
You don't know what you don't know.
But right now you kind of have the best of both worlds because you have a flexible schedule.
I do. For the most part. I work full time and then I have these three boys. When COVID happened and this remote work happened, the University of Illinois adopted such a spectacular sort of acceptance of hybrid and remote work. And I know that because I took, through the University of Illinois campus HR system, a certification course where I got certified through the university in managing hybrid and remote teams. And so I went through a whole process of education of the university's policies on it and how it's how it works and when it works and how if you are hybrid, how it should work and how if you are remote, how it should work and when it is important and when you have to be in the office. So there's some jobs where you just can't be hybrid or remote.
So at this time when you're decided to step back from a typical career, you have Donnie. Now, we talked in the pre-interview what you're really comfortable with talking about, and you wanted to talk about your infertility journey. So yeah, Donnie, I mean, was easy peasy?
No, he wasn't easy peasy. And, and the reason I just like brought up, I feel like we've talked over the years as friends off the record, you know, about trials and tribulations and struggles that we have as parents, as women. And I have seen over the years, so 10, 12 years ago, I was like many people who might be out there who, you know, you think you're going to get married and just have kids. Like, my mom was one of those moms. She's like, if you have sex, you're getting pregnant immediately. So do not have sex ever.
Until you're ready to have a baby.
Until you're married.
Yes. You
know, and ready to have a baby. And so sure enough, I get married and I can't get pregnant.
Shoot.
And it was... So, like, again, anybody who's been through that, it is a different sort of set of emotions you never expect as a woman, where biologically you're supposed to, like, this is part of Mother Nature, like, it is just supposed to happen.
Right.
So what are those feelings? And then the fear of, like, never being able to potentially have kids. And then I think that it fails all of us, and I'm super guilty of it, is having this, like, script for your life.
Oh, yeah.
Even from the time that you're, like, a baby, like, a little girl.
Yeah.
And so... Like, that wasn't part of my script, and it was haunting. And then you go through just all of the doctor's appointments and testing and all these things, and it just doesn't work and doesn't work. Like, you have hope, you don't have hope. And so it's just this evil cycle that, like, weighs on you and is so incredibly hard and painful. And so I applaud all partners of women out there that are there for them through this, and all women who are champions who have gone through this. And I share in, you know, the sadness and the grief and I hope the strength that, of the people that maybe are still struggling with that.
Yeah.
So that was really hard. And then Donnie was sort of this miracle baby. And so then I made this, like, mistake where I was like, not a mistake, but I was like, shoot, it took so long to get pregnant. I better start trying right away.
The age old story.
And then I did. And guess what worked right away? I mean, I still had to do the infertility pieces of it, but, like, previously with Donnie, but like, oh, let's try this. Doesn't work. Does it? So many times it didn't work that, like, I just expected so many times it not to work again, and that didn't happen. And then I have these two little firecrackers that came 21 months later.
So 21 months apart, Donnie and then Tommy and Billy, the twin boys.
Yeah.
Identical or fraternal?
Fraternal.
Fraternal.
Yep.
So 21 months apart, all three boys. How do you feel about raising three boys? Was there ever this feeling like, and I've talked to a lot of people about this, about having a girl, or that the there are support groups for moms of just boys. It is a different animal.
Yeah, it is.
Did you ever give up a dream of having a girl? Did that ever occur to you?
So I thought when Tommy and Billy, when I didn't know their sex, I was like 100% sure I was going to have girls. Like, how could you just have twin boys after a boy? Like, the, I was like, I thought I'd have a boy girl. And I don't know. I was just excited to, like, be pregnant, especially after all that I went through. But then I think I'm just a boy mom at heart.
I feel that about myself.
I think that I'm a boy mom at heart.
And I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago. But now, I mean, I cannot see it any other way.
I think it would, like, scare the crap out of me.
And you are fully invested in their athletics, being at everything. And you enjoy watching them.
I do. I mean, it's my favorite thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I just had, like, a conversation with another mom friend. So we're in this, like, travel baseball world.
Oh, God, travel baseball.
Yeah, it's, like, totally crazy and, like, depressing. I'm just kidding. It's a money suck. It's like so horrible. It ruins every weekend from April to... No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't ruin every... So that was my attitude for a long time because like I have a lot of really fun friends. I love going out. You know, I love adult time. Mm-hmm. I think we're so down into the trenches of like parent time. So all of a sudden my kids get to this age where it's like travel baseball and travel this. And I'm like, whoa, what about the me weekend? Like, when is that happening? Oh, wait, I can't go to my friend's thing because we're in
Rantoul
or Peoria again, just sitting there on my bag chair. Like,
or your igloo.
Yeah, my pod, my weather pod. Sometimes I daydream about taking that weather pod and putting it in my house. Ugh. Just sitting in there so nobody talks quiet. To me.
Oh my God. In a bubble.
But yeah, so like, but raising boys, what I did learn that I had this sort of awakening. And so the first like 2 years of travel baseball, I complained a lot to anybody that would listen about how much of a time suck it is. Mm. And how it like takes me away from all these fun things I want to do and these concerts I want to go to. And then last year I had a huge number of friends that had kids graduating high school.
Oh God.
And I know where this is going. Huge number of kids that of graduation parties and of my friends, I was watching them, their kids who I've known since these kids were like five, going away to college and it just ending.
Yeah.
That last summer I was like in gross hotel rooms with my seventh grader, sixth grader at the time. And I was like, oh my God, I have to soak up every minute. Like what a gift to be like given to you that you get 3 weekends or 4 weekends every month. And it's just you and the kids.
Uh-huh.
And you get to have meals with them because you're at a tournament and you get to stay in hotel rooms with them. And my perspective on it completely changed. Like, it wasn't a dingy hotel room anymore. And it wasn't me missing a concert or, you know, a fun night at my friend's house or whatever. It was, how lucky am I that I get this time with my kids? And it's just me and them. And like, I used to complain, like, oh, I have to drive like 2 hours to this tournament. Or Peoria is like the worst because it's like not far enough to actually warrant a stay.
Yeah.
It's like 90 minutes. So like, I have to drive to Peoria again and then drive home. But like, guess what? That's 90 minutes with my kid that like I get to talk to them.
Uh-huh. Because in 3, 4, 5 years, they're not going to want to talk to us as much.
No, but like, and then also it's just, we'll be over.
Yeah.
And I had a mom friend ask me like, oh, how bad is it? And I told them sort of a version of the story. And I just said, it's going to suck. But I want you to try to remember that sometime it all ends and I want you to soak it all up and like love every minute in that gross hotel room that you have with just you and your kid and laying out their stinky uniforms and doing all the things.
Yeah, that is such a good attitude and such an important perspective change because we all, I mean, we, whether it's travel baseball or homework or anything, we start to complain and it's going to be over.
Yeah.
We're going to wake up tomorrow and they're going to be at the U of I or whatever. And
hopefully they better be. Shoot, man.
And not to mention, Donnie, I'm not as familiar with, but Tommy and Billy are extremely talented athletes.
Oh, they're crazy.
Yeah, can you say that?
They are very lucky that they were given gifts that make them good at things. But I will tell you,
multiple sports.
Yes. And so I remind them of that all the time, that this is a gift that you were given by God. And you better use it the right way. And but I'll tell you what happens is particularly going back to this travel baseball or no matter where you go, whether it's basketball or whatever, and you'll see it as like, you know, like we'll have this basketball team and then you elevate to sectionals and then to state. And then you just see the pool of talent that they're checked in their talent all the time.
I mean, oh, interesting.
They're still trying out for travel baseball teams with their knees shaking because they don't know. And I don't know if every time if they're going to get a spot on the team.
Mm.
And then you go to these tournaments in Indiana and Peoria and you see this talent and you're like, whoa, that's why they're not making it to the MLB. Like, because I mean, the talent pool is just outrageous.
Oh,
and then
wow.
These hotbed communities, particularly up in the suburbs, even in Little League Baseball, you'll watch like sort of the Little League grow in the summer. They'll be picked to be on some sort of team that will go to what the Little League equivalent of like a state tournament. By the time you have some of these major, huge cities with a huge pool of talent coming in, it's eye opening
and humbling.
Yes.
And you think that's a good thing for.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. To kind of, keep things in perspective. Okay. So these adorable boys. Now, Tommy and Billy, I have the privilege of giving a ride home to sometimes, even, and it's like a few blocks. Mm-hmm. And Tommy spills the tea.
Oh, yeah.
He tells me what's happened in their day.
Oh, yeah.
And he is so extremely honest. How do you describe their personalities, Tommy and Billy, the difference, and Donnie?
Oh, my God. They're all, like, really different, and they're totally different humans. A friend told me when I was pregnant with twins that don't ever refer to them as twins. They are individual people, and so it's never like, oh, the twins are coming over. Or, oh, I think it's normal for, like, other people say it, but as a parent, it's really important to make that distinction between, like, I don't say, like, oh, twins come over here, oh, the twins are coming to you in front of them, because it's so important to their identity to establish this is Tommy, this is, you know, Billy. Mm-hmm. And so,
and they are very different from each other.
Yes, yes.
What about friends, birthday parties? Do you try to keep everything separate as much as you can?
I try to. I'm hoping that we're at the age where we don't have birthday parties anymore.
We've aged out.
Yeah, like they just had a birthday in January, and I was like,
Do you got to go somewhere or do this? I like to just let's go somewhere.
Well, I just was like, do we have to have a birthday party?
I know. It gets hard. Yeah, it gets hard.
And because then you're at this thing where, like, do you invite everybody? Mm-hmm. And, you know, or, you know, if you invite a reasonable number of people, still people are left out and feel hurt. And yeah. So, and again, I think that goes back to, like, the second child. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I will stood birthday parties longer maybe for Donnie.
Sure. So tell me about this concept of raising men. It is extremely important to you.
Super important.
Super important. Probably most important, really. That these three boys are the most courteous, gentlemen, respectful of women as possible.
So I want them to be courteous and, of course, like, respectful. I know that they're not perfect. I just want to say that. Like, they're not perfect. They have made mistakes and hurt people's feelings. And so that, like, you know, in grade school and whatever, and they hurt each other's feelings, you know. So I see it, like, in our home.
Yeah.
You know, Donnie will do something little and one of the others will just roast him to the point where, like, Donnie's crying and, like, you didn't need to go there. Yeah. You know, and so there's that element of, like, be a good person. And the other day we were actually just talking about emotional intelligence. Mm. And they said something about somebody in their class or one of the classes getting upset, and Tommy said, I just knew I had to say something different because what I was saying was upsetting this person. And it was something about, like, french fries, like, it was not a big serious thing. And he said, well, I just changed my opinion on it when I saw it was making upset. I think he told a friend that he didn't like dipping his french fries in a certain thing.
Oh my God.
And I said, Tommy, that's a really, like, that's called emotional intelligence. Mm. When you can read that what you're doing, even though it might not be wrong, is hurting someone and adapting to that. And when someone else says, you know, one of the things I've corrected them, somebody will say something and they'll be like, well, it wasn't cool. Like, what Donnie said wasn't cool. I'm like, but it, like, hurt him. Like, why do you need to tell your brother, that's not cool, you yeah. know? And so having that emotional intelligence is something that I work really, really hard. And they're, you know, it's a struggle. They're immature. They're 10 year, 11 years old,
yeah.
you know, and they're boys.
Yeah.
Boys, I think, even have a higher, you know, susceptibility to immaturity than the girls do.
Yeah. And we're right on the cusp of them changing puberty and all of that. So we talked before the interview about the subject of having difficult conversations with them, talking about sex, what's appropriate, consent, all of those things that are coming to the forefront of the news, specifically with Terrence Shannon Jr. and the U of I basketball team. You were very concerned when this got publicized, what happened with Terrence, on how to tell the boys, because they didn't hear from you first.
They didn't hear from me first. So in middle school, a lot of middle schoolers have phones. Mm-hmm. I think that people are starting to get phones, you know, like in fifth grade, if not sooner. And so we do have, you know, parental controls on there. We have all sorts of blocks on there, time blocks, screen time controls, everything that, like, we can do with those. But, you know, when the local newspaper is something that my seventh grader follows, I don't think there's anything wrong with following the local newspaper.
Sure.
But it was a headline
right.
in the local newspaper.
Right.
And we were in a car together with another mom and her son, and they were asking a million questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it you know, broke my heart to have them have to ask these really tough questions and to have these really tough conversations. But we also, me and the other mom in the car, worked to make it a teachable moment. Mm. At one point, one of my kids said to me, because I was like, this could have happened or this could have happened and we don't know. And we've really, and there has been substantial conversations about due process, mm-hmm. as we've known as this is, what is due process? What do you have a right to? Mm-hmm. And that has been a teachable moment as well. And something they learn in school.
Right.
And so there's been a lot of conversations. And at one point, one of my boys said, Mom, no offense, but this isn't really my problem. Because he felt like I was attacking him. Like, I got so heated mm-hmm. in the car about all the things mm-hmm. and all the pieces of this story. And I think that I was also triggered because my kids were reading about it on their phones.
Yeah.
Not through a weirdo app.
Yeah.
But through, like, the local newspaper.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
One of my kids said, no offense, but this isn't my problem. And I don't know if my blood boiled faster in recent times than when I whipped around in the car and looked at him and I said, you have a penis?
Right.
This is your problem.
Right, right, right.
No matter where these chips fall.
Yes.
It is their problem because of the very nature that they were born male. Mm-hmm. And for centuries and centuries, you know, men have treated women, you know, in a variety of situations, good or bad. Mm-hmm. But it is my job as a mother to instill in them how to be a good human.
Right.
And how to treat women mm-hmm. totally unrelated to anything that's been in the news.
Yeah.
But they need to know these things. And not just to protect women, mm-hmm. but to protect themselves.
100%.
They need to protect themselves, and they need to protect women. And if I tell them all the time, too. I go, if I ever even find out that you're treating your husband or your wife in a bad way, and I'm still around, you're going to hear it from
right,
me.
Right, right.
Because I'm not going to let any sort of anything happen where you're mistreating your partner.
Right. And we also talked about the importance of if there's drinking involved, there's drugs involved, there's blurry lines. You don't know who's saying what's going on. It's always going to be blurry. It's not going to be black and white. So you have to be so freaking careful.
And I like to talk to them too about the importance of relationships and at what point in relationships would it maybe be acceptable to do something? I don't know the answer to this, but these days, do boys need consent to kiss a girl?
Oh my God.
I don't know. Because when we were growing up, it was like romantic for a guy just to kiss you. And 100%. Especially one that you like wanted to kiss you.
Yeah. Yeah. Times have changed. You know. Yeah. So with the, however, you know, the things fall, like you said, with Taryn Shannon, we'll always have this impression and this stain, whether he's guilty or not guilty. And that's too, your reputation is forever tainted.
I think that it was hard for me to have three boys who look up to a lot of athletes and a lot of musicians who do in many ways walk on water, you know? And then they're like, but wait, what happened? Where did Taryn Shannon go? Mm-hmm. And that was the question. Why isn't he playing?
Yeah.
And so I think my question to you, Emily, was I texted you because I was so like emotional about it. Like, what am I supposed to say to my kids?
Yeah.
And like, I said, like, what are you saying to your kids? And you guys were out of town and sort of shielded from
100%.
It. 100%. But like, we weren't. And it was a conversation among all the kids.
Yeah.
Fifth grade and up is my area, you know? And so I don't know if it's an easier conversation for high schoolers or older, but like, again, we've talked about it. Like, we hadn't had a conversation about the accusations mm-hmm. with my fifth grader before, and mm-hmm. now we are.
Right. So I asked you, what do you think it's appropriate to have a conversation? So our sons are 10 and 11. Our youngest, anyway, your youngest, 10 and 11, about sex.
So I heard advice a long time ago with a couple that, like, I think it was something weird, like, when do you stop showering with your kid?
Yes.
Like, as creepy as it is, you know? Like, when do you make sure that, what, you're, like,
don't walk off your shirt off or whatever.
And so, like, when does that change, you know? And because your kid's, like, one, like, they don't know what's going on. And so The answer to that question was when they're uncomfortable or you're like, you know, they're too old for that. And I take the same approach with the sex conversation, like let them take the lead.
Mm.
You know, if they're asking about it, thank God they're like talking to you about it.
You're right.
Let them take the lead. Because maybe some kids are ready to know more sooner than the others. And we talked about it. You know, my youngest kids are the same age as your oldest kid. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think that Tommy and Billy naturally probably are exposed to things sooner because they have a seventh grade brother.
Yes, I agree. Because I still see Fletcher as like a 5-year-old, like in kindergarten, and talking to him about this blows my mind that we are here.
I mean, and there's other things too. So, you know, I don't know if people are going to judge me for this, but like we'll go to like something and I know that I'm going to have more than 2 alcoholic drinks.
Uh-huh.
That's like my 2 drinks over like several hours. I'll have like one in like an hour or two and then another maybe if I'm still there. But like, you know, I'm super crazy about all of that. Like, so we'll Uber occasionally. And we have to go to like a big party or something. And initially my kids were like, why are we Ubering? I'm like, well, because I think I might have more than 2 drinks over this 4-hour period.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's my, you know, threshold. And I don't think that you should have, I don't think you ever should get behind a car with anybody who's had more to drink than that. And I want to normalize that. So when they're older, they say, oh, if I'm going to have more than 2 drinks, I'm Ubering.
That is because interesting. That's yeah.
What I always learned from my mom. And so, you know, we Ubered to like tailgates and stuff, but that more so has to do with the fact that parking
is such a bitch. Yeah. You know, we are really honest about drugs and alcohol, but the sex thing we just have not broken into yet. But this is something I think Andrew and I need to, it's time to start talking about.
But maybe you don't have to like start it off as like penetration in certain areas. You know, maybe the conversation is physical touch.
Yeah.
What does physical touch look like? And that is something that I talked to my boys about when this news all came out. What is, you know, physical touch? Like, when maybe do you need to have a conversation with the person you're engaging this with?
Mm.
You know, I don't think you have to go like from zero to like erotica, Emily.
Right,
I
mean, right. Get a PowerPoint out. Yeah. Oh my God.
I think that maybe you can start with physical touch and what does that mean and what do important relationships mean? I mean,
I think that's a good idea because the boys, Tommy, Billy, and Fletcher in particular, they are talking about girls and crushes and this and that. And I like her and all of that. So,
well, another like thing when I say like taking their lead on things, there was a situation last year in school where people were butt smacking and it was a mutual butt smacking and they all got in trouble because they were playing tag and then someone dared someone to smack them on the butt.
Sure.
And, again, all gender, you know, and it was a big, serious conversation. And that's even, I think, at how at these younger ages, like it, you now, well, why wouldn't you? You're just, I'm in third or fourth grade. Like, why can't I smack so-and-so on the butt?
Yeah.
Like, well.
Maybe that's a good place to start. Yeah.
Like using those teachable moments, I guess, is where I try to take that lead.
Okay. So now we've had kids. We're growing them. We're raising them. We're at all the things. We're at the sporting events. I remember there was a time that you were at the Y.
Oh, yeah.
And Project Athletes came to light.
Oh, yeah.
Is Project Athletes still up and running? Yeah. And tell me about that.
Yeah, we're super excited about Project Athletes. So there was a group of us that it was around 2015, 2016, and we saw that there were kids in the community that could afford to get personal training, and they came from families that could afford that, and there were families that couldn't afford that. And so these kids from families that could afford personal training were asking to bring their friends, but the friends weren't paying, and it caused quite a controversy. And so this group of us kind of brainstormed, why is this happening? And this is part of something I'm really passionate about, but the systemic part of society, of why systemic racism is there and why systemic, all sorts of systems are built to create roadblocks for different groups, even men, women, race, religion, you know, everything. But so we looked at how the system was sort of, you know, or resources were lacked for certain groups. And so we said, you know what, maybe we should just raise some money to try to make sure that like, we can remove these roadblocks to athletics. And so what evolved was an amazing team of people that got a 501(c) started, a nonprofit organization that became Project Athletes. And the mission is to remove roadblocks to athletics, to be inclusive to everyone, regardless of socioeconomic background, and to create a team for people to become a part of. And so what happened was is that we found that it attracted all sorts of different people, like people from wealthy, not wealthy, but like they could afford, you know, personal training, but like from not at-risk backgrounds, to people that are coming from low-income at-risk backgrounds, to people who tried out for the volleyball team at the middle school and didn't make it, and they have nothing to do after school, and they feel terrible about themselves, and they don't have a team to be a part of. And so we went into, we started the Boys and Girls Club. We're not there currently, but then we went into the Champaign and Urbana schools, middle schools, and we offered this opportunity after school, and we wanted to be a safety net. One, we wanted something for kids to do after school, even if like you're not sort of this at-risk student or disconnected from the school environment.
Sure.
But also to create a safety net for kids who need a team to be a part of, who are interested in getting better in sort of these health and wellness activities. And so we do speed and agility training and a bit of mentorship. I'm not involved in those sessions because of my job at the university, but we have this amazing team of coaches, and I help foster through like my off hours, sort of these community partnerships and contracts, like just making sure. So we're starting back up at Franklin Middle School in February for the semester. And so we'll be there two times a week after school with the kids there. And again, the makeup of the group is super diverse. Like there's phenomenal athletes that are amazing straight A students that come, and then there's kids that like just don't want to go home, like sadly, like they don't want to go home, and they don't have any money to go to any sort of personal training, but they love basketball and they want to get better and do, you know, things with their life, but they don't have the opportunity. And so Project Athletes wanted to create that opportunity for people to have healthy, structured activities, a team to be a part of after school.
How many years ago did this begin?
2016.
Wow.
And so, and then we have summer speed school in the summer, through a partnership with Champaign Park District. So we're out there, you know, in the summers, and that's like all these schools and people from their backgrounds come together and work out together with our amazing team of coaches.
If someone wanted to be involved, either support or get their kids involved, what can they do?
So if you're able to support, there's a website, projectathletes.com, and there's a PayPal donate button on there. And then we try to keep, so right now our opportunities are school specific. So when we're at Franklin, it's only for Franklin students. But the Unifor School District has been doing some amazing things with offering more opportunities to their students. And so I've worked with Dr. Boozer recently, another gentleman named Orlando Thomas, and another gentleman named James Harden, who are really working to create these opportunities and partnerships with organizations like Project Athletes. And so we're working to expand more consistently into the middle schools after school.
That's where I think it would probably be
the sweet spot. Yes. The middle school is the sweet spot.
Yes. They need it. Middle school is not easy. So remember your body pump, body attack days?
Oh, yeah.
So you worked at the Y before you transitioned into full-time work. It was kind of your
So that
limbo.
Was like I went to work. So first of all, I was like drowning at home with three babies. And I was like, I need, and they offered free child, they still do, but they offer free child care for 2 hours. I'm like, oh my God, is this like a joke? Like, you'll take my kids for 2 hours? You know I have three of them, right?
Yes.
And they did.
I survived because of child care at gyms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was able to work out. And then I just kind of got like so into the workout and the group fitness, and I just became like my support group, you know. And there was a ton of moms there with similar age kids,
right?
And so and then somebody was like, you should teach, and I was like, wait, I can come here, you'll watch my kids for free and you'll pay me? Cool. Like,
sign me
up. Like, this is the best job ever.
Yeah, you were great at that. But that was kind of like this limbo between mommyhood full-time, the YMCA, Project Athletes starting, and then you were getting your foot in the door. You're ready to go back to work. And you found that to be quite a
undertaking.
I
do not believe that the world is a nice place to women I'm not a man, so I don't know how it is for them, but for women who step away from their careers to take care of their families and then decide that they want to go back to work full time. Right. I always wanted to like work, but mm-hmm. go back to what we just talked about. My max out salary when my first kid was born was $30,000 a year. It didn't make sense and I didn't like it enough to stay, you know? So I always try to keep my foot in the door. I was working at SJ Broadcasting about 10 hours a week for Stevie J. I could edit radio. I could do podcasting type stuff. I can use all the software. And so I would do some segments for the radio station. Then I was tapped to be an adjunct instructor through the journalism department at U of I. So I had these like three little part-time jobs that I kind of weaved together. And it was for my mental health too, because I was like, again, going back to like, it's so hard being a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just need a break. Because my kids weren't in school really at the time.
Right.
And so I was like, if I can get a babysitter for like 3 hours, then maybe I can go teach this class. And I'm just gone for 3 hours. And then I'm keeping my foot in the door. So I don't know if there was ever a long time, like longer than maybe 3 months, where I truly wasn't working at all.
Sure.
But what I found when I was applying for jobs full time, like I got like no interviews. The skill set was like somehow I wasn't doing a good job on my resume or something to show that translation or how my skills from my other jobs as a news reporter at the radio station teaching translated into the current position. That's the advice I give people, is that make sure that you are looking at a job description that's posted and translating your skills directly how they are on that job description. I don't think I was very good at that, but if you're not doing a good job of that, like you're not getting interviews. But I was so heartbroken and beat down that I got maybe 3 phone interviews or whatever it was, and nothing came of it. And I was like, the world is such an evil place to women who decide to step away to take care of their families. And you don't even know the logistics behind it. Like maybe they genuinely want to spend time with their kids and have this role at this pivotal time in their child's life. Maybe it doesn't make sense financially for their family. Maybe, you know, all sorts of different scenarios. And you just don't know. So don't judge people on their life.
Right.
But
where did you apply those 8 times? Was it all at U of I?
I applied everywhere. Okay. I applied like to all these communications jobs at U of I. I applied at BUC, you know. I think I applied at least once at Carl, you know, just like the main employers in town that would have marketing communications jobs.
So was this a low point?
I mean, I think that like that was a scary point. And they were like, and I had my master's degree from U of I, an undergrad and master's degree from U of I, like, and I didn't not have experience. Yeah. I had like 7 years experience in broadcast news, journalism, public relations, and it was tough. Like, but some of the jobs are like really specific. And so what I've seen other people have to do at the university is you have to take a job that is a lower pay rate than you'd expect to have to take. And that's the hard part about it. And that's why I think the world is difficult for women that choose to step away. But sure. I also think the world's really difficult for women who don't step away, because then you harbor this other mom guilt that like you're at work when your 5-month-old is at a daycare facility.
Yes.
I mean, everyone has a struggle.
And today, what is your current job?
Director of Marketing Communications at the Carl Illinois College of Medicine at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
That is a mouthful.
It is. But you know what? It's so important. It's a new medical school. It's the world's first engineering-based college of medicine. So years ago, let's say around 2015, 2016, there was a group of remarkable people in this community that said, you know, we have like one of the best engineering schools in the world. And we don't have a medical school, so let's bring a medical school here. And we know where technology is going, because the University of Illinois, I mean, they are so pioneering with research and innovation and technology. And they knew, you know, 10 years ago that like the way the medical community is going, like AI and like wearing, you know, extended mixed reality, like AI, all those things, and how technology is changing. I mean, physicians now at Carl Illinois College of Medicine, they're training what we call physician innovators, where they can like tap into like a hologram of like a heart will come up, and you can like spin the hologram around and then tap in, you know, eventually to like a smart hospital that are being created like around the world, and say, hey, physician A in other country around the world, look at this hologram heart. Can you tell me what is happening here? Jeez. And these physician innovators are right here in our community, like going into our clinics in our communities and say, and identifying problems and technologies and processes, and then with their engineering curriculum that's infused into their education, figuring out solutions and working with teams of engineers at Illinois and GEIS students, business students, to develop business plans. And they're really going to change the face of medicine if they aren't already. And so it's a super exciting place to work and to be.
What do you do there specifically?
So I help, going back to my roots, I help storytell the story of the college. And so we work, I help lead our team for reputation and brand awareness. So one of the most challenging parts of it is that it's a new-ish medical school. So they graduated their first class in 2022.
Oh, wow.
So we've only graduated two classes.
Wow.
And so it's still very new.
Sure.
There was a University of Illinois Medical School prior, okay? So there was for many, many decades.
Mm-hmm.
That medical school sunset as the engineering-based College of Medicine kind of rose up and became Carl Illinois College of Medicine. And so I do the reputation, brand awareness. I manage a team of writers, graphic designers, manage the web. And then there's a lot of partnerships, international partnerships, corporate partnerships. And so any sort of thing related to branding, storytelling, marketing, I help lead that team at the College of Medicine.
So I'll wrap up here because I know we got to get our kids and all that. But we talked a little bit as like the thread that goes through your story is one of resilience, right? Mm-hmm. And you seem to be proud of your job and where you are today. Would you say that's accurate?
Very proud, yes.
The resilience piece, can you explain how you've developed resiliency and how that's led to the pride you feel toward this life you have created, this independence you've created?
Sure. I think that resiliency often derives itself from really challenging, traumatic, dark times. And I certainly wasn't immune to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of things that I know you wanted to talk about that I just like felt very triggering, too vulnerable, out of privacy for people involved, you know, I'm just not comfortable talking about. But what I will say is that similar to all of us out there, everybody has a cross they're bearing. And just because you might, you know, carry it well doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. And so I think that I know that in my life there, I mean, it might have just the struggle to get pregnant was one, but there's other very challenging, dark and sad moments in time that were very, very, very sad years that I'm still not healed from.
Mm.
And, you know, my therapist, my family and my friends would probably be like, oh, my God, look at how far you've come. You know, you have to get over that. You have to move on. But I think that there are some wounds that never completely heal. And you can go through the cycle of grief. And anybody who has suffered tragedy and loss and really, really, really truly hard times, dark times that you never would wish on anybody else is certainly something that I've been through. And when you get to that dark, dark place, you have like a choice of how you're going to rise up. And when you have, you know, a family and you can rise above that and somehow survive, whatever that means, is something that, you know, has been a part of where I am today.
Yeah.
And I think that the cycle of grief, I always think it's just cruel. You know, you go through grief and you think you're good and then something triggers you and happens and you're not good.
Yeah.
And then you think that you've grown and then you still find yourself angry about things you shouldn't be angry about anymore. I think that maybe that's me growing. Like I can recognize I shouldn't be angry about this, certain things anymore. But I think that resilience is huge and raising these boys in a way that's like makes me proud and makes them proud of themselves. I want my kids proud of themselves.
Yeah.
And I know when they make mistakes, they're not proud of themselves. And that's another key message.
And I hope you're very proud of yourself because you've turned into like, I mean, you're just such an independent powerhouse these days. Oh, I mean, really. The way I've seen you change and evolve, I mean, there's been some hard times, but you have like, you've really come to the surface. You really have. And I know it wasn't always easy, but you're a homeowner, you've got three boys, you've got this adorable dog. I mean, you're doing all the right things.
Oh, thanks, Emily.
And I'm not gonna call them the twins.
You can, you're not their parent. I just learned that like they have to have their own independence and not like be thought of as a unit, you know.
And like birthday cards, they should each get their own birthday card. Like, you know, you have to think of them as separate entities.
Yeah.
But I adore them. And if that's a reflection of you.
Fletcher. Well, they went, I dropped them off for Fletcher's big thing the other night with his edible book or whatever.
We lost.
My kids project. Were like, I need to go see Fletcher's edible book project.
Tommy's like, I'll be there at 5:15. It was so sweet.
I was on the treadmill in my basement at 5:15. And he's like, can you take me? And I was like, are you serious? He's like, I have to go. And I was like, I'm not getting out of the car. I like dropped him, went home.
All that.
Got back on the treadmill.
So cute. Yeah. Well, they're dolls. But Ryan, thank you.
Hey, thank you.
I'm going to get a text in 15 minutes. Can you take this out? And I don't know. Do you think? You feel good about this?
No. Yeah. I don't think so.
Okay, good. All right. Well, good luck tonight. You're hosting 21 boys.
Yeah, 21 middle school boys before the 7th grade dance.
That's a big deal. That is a big deal. Yeah. I want to see pictures. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. However your podcast host of choice allows, please positively rate, review, comment, and give all the stars. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, share, and ring that notification bell so you know when the next episode drops. Also, search and follow Hyperlocal CU on all social media. If I forgot anything or you need me, visit my website at hyperlocalcu.com. Bye!